Hey, Brendan.
Hello, Alan.
And happy anniversary.
Happy anniversary, buddy. We've
Yep.
made it one whole year.
Nobody died or
That we're willing to admit.
right. No one got thrown in jail.
That we're willing to admit.
We've broadcasted from or podcasted rather from three different countries now.
Yes, two different continents.
And I think I haven't looked back to see how many that we've done from like when since we're recording in two different locations, but it's pretty good. It's a pretty good number. I mean,
I think most.
yeah, I think so.
I think we're
Definitely.
at 52 released episodes,
That's
but this
right.
is actually episode number 50.
Yeah.
Or no, I
And
guess it'd be 53 we've released.
is it?
Well, you got
Oh,
episode
man.
zero, the Norwegian episode, and the
Count from zero. Yeah. Okay.
So boom, we did it. We're over the hill.
Yeah, and the official quote unquote like anniversary days, I guess, is it Thursday?
Yeah, it's
The
Thursday.
25th, last year.
So just wait to listen to this. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
Listen, go ahead and just keep listening.
No, please
It's not going
listen.
to get any better.
Listen to it like on loop between now and the 25th, and then on the 25th you can cheer. Meanwhile, make sure you turn up this part, which is thanks for listening to the Not a Thing podcast, Not a Thing cast on Twitter, notathingpodcast.com. Where else are we? On Facebook? We're
Yeah.
everywhere. We're on iTunes. It's amazing.
We are.
Yeah. They
We
haven't kicked us
did
off yet. It's great.
it. Well, that's because I put on that adult content warning. So we don't have to worry about them pulling our episodes for swearing.
Shit.
It's time for our midlife podcast crisis because we're over 53 now. So we gotta go. I gotta upgrade for a younger co-host and get a faster car.
Always playing the old co-host card. That's fun. Well, it's been a pleasure, Brendan. Thank you.
We've made it. We did what we set out to do. We're still here, and potentially people are still listening.
Yeah, thanks everybody for putting on the old headphones or streaming it to your car or whatever people are doing to listen to these things these days. Who knows? But yeah, it's been good, and we're gonna continue to be good, hopefully. If you'd like to directly help with this, let us know on our various channels of media information. We would love to have you on. We like guests and stuff like that. It's been a little while since we've had one, so
Guests light up our podcast.
yes. Not that I guess a podcast has to light anything up. It's really kind of a sound thing only, not really a visual thing. I
Well,
don't.
I was trying to set you up for a segue, Alan, but apparently a year in, we're still working on those transitions. I set him up, you'd whiff.
Yes.
And vice versa.
So sort of speaking of light,
Oh.
sort of.
If only we did editing.
Yes. I don't know what that means. Brendan, we talked about last week some stuff in Antarctica about winter and how it was like a this big ordeal because it was dark all the time. Well, it's the opposite right now in the northern hemisphere, kind of near the pole, and specifically in Norway, they're making preparations, or preparations have already been made, and they're just waiting to test them out.
I don't know how to say winter is coming in Norwegian, but we should find out. Yeah, any of our Norwegian listeners, let us know.
Jürgen, we're looking at you. But yes, we're eagerly awaiting what happens in winter to this small town, which I can't pronounce.
Yeah, I'm not even going to try that one.
Yeah, we'll
look. It'll be in the show notes.
Right.
It starts with an R. There's a consonant where a vowel should be.
Right.
So, you know, Norwegian.
Yeah, but it's not Finnish. Finnish names would have like 14 too many letters, despite how short the word is or whatever. Anyway, the town is apparently kind of nestled in a valley or otherwise behind a mountain that somehow after, you know, during the winter months, it actually blocks all sunlight that gets there. Normally you get a little bit of sun, even in the darkest kind of months, because the sun will dip down below, but you'll still get like twilight kind of light, like a little bit of light. But I guess because of the way the mountains are where this town is, it's just dark all the time during winter, and no direct sunlight comes in. And so in what I can only describe as a anti-Mr. Burnsian kind of action, they've, instead of building a big thing which blocks the sun, they're building a big mirror to reflect the sun into the town. And it looks, from the article, it's not, you don't get that much. I mean, the mirror is pretty big, but I guess, you know, because of
it's a little over 2,000 like square feet that'll be lit up.
Right.
So it's like the spot. There literally will be the hot spot in town to go to.
Wow, 2,000 square feet.
Yeah.
That's tiny. That's like 40 by 50 kind of feet?
Or sure, like, but it won't be feet because it's
yeah, right. Norway. Like 12 by 15 meters or something like that. I'm sure someone can tell us exactly what it is. Jürgen, we're looking at you. But anyway, the artist's rendition, if you can even call that, was they show this little circle of light on what appears to be a skating rink, because they're going to put a skating rink in town so people can kind of have some joy during the winter months, I guess. But I think this is a great idea. I think I do think that it's good that it's a restricted amount of light, because the interesting thing is before this, right? I mean, this town has existed. There are people that live in the town. I think the population's like 3,500 people. Mm-hmm. And for a town to have 3,500 people where 5 months out of the year there's no sunlight at all, you'd think that the people in this town have kind of grown accustomed to that and knew it was coming. So I'm wondering if they're going to think the big light is an intrusion on their kind of serenity of life.
I wonder if there will be an increase in reports of alien abductions.
The sudden light in the sky kind of thing. Is that what you're going for?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Possibly. And if you live in a place that's dark 5 months a year, you're going to be drunk. So if what we've learned about Antarctica has taught us anything.
Oh, yeah. I think it will be an interesting result on many fronts. So we're looking to see how that goes. So a preview of winter, hopefully soon.
Definitely a thing.
Yeah. I think it's good. We'll link that in the notes, because I'm not sure how we find that otherwise. It's kind of a weird kind of thing to look up, but also.
But I found it.
But you found it, which is more than what the NSA can do apparently about mail. There was an article this week about someone was writing up. I guess, interviews about how the email system at the NSA works, and it's such an arcane and weird and, you know, it looks like technologically backwards setup that it's difficult for them to search their own mail, is what the bottom line comes down to. And I feel like this is, it's kind of an interesting story, but at the same time, there's this like kind of nagging thought in the back of my head that's like, nice try, NSA. We're still not going to be happy about giving you all of our data.
I don't buy it.
I mean, the article goes on to say, like, they can't do advanced searches on mail. And
what, they don't have Thunderbird? You can find anything with that
shit. Right. And you know, they could just buy the Google search appliance. Google does sell that, and, you know, it'll index all of their mail and do it. But yeah, pretty much any email reader, you know, Thunderbird is a great one if you're a open source Mozilla kind of guy. But it's like they just work. They do that kind of automatically. Everyone does search. So it's a little dubious. I think maybe they mean that they can't do like very specific or very kind of automated in the background kinds of searches, looking for like keywords, you know, on a, you know, they can search manually, but they can't have like a running thing, which I still don't fully believe. So
there's probably some people that can type quickly at the NSA that could run those searches for you for your Freedom of Information Act requests.
There's certainly enough money going towards it.
Maybe although, they say that they can't do it because then, you know, we'll find all the evil shit that they do.
Yeah. Or maybe even they more will. So.
Yeah, maybe they will. We've been doing what? It's a double-blind national security agency.
I mean, I like to think that our government agencies are competent and coordinated. At the same time, I don't want them to be that coordinated necessarily. I think it's fine if they're off balance, but this might be a little too off balance to be real. So
conveniently off balance.
Yeah, especially in light of kind of recent NSA related events. So we can just cut that one out of thingness. I think one's
not a thing, you
know, right? But speaking of cutting, a really interesting invention this week, kind of moving into our not a thing podcast technology segment, as you might, you almost can call it. Is a surgical knife, which I thought the interesting thing about the surgical knife was that it cauterizes as it cuts, which I admit is a little kind of gross. Unfortunately, it goes one step further. I mean, cauterizing as it cuts means that it heals itself as you go, so you're not...
Yeah, like a lightsaber.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, why would you not want that?
Right. But the interesting thing is it has a built-in mass spectrometer, and so I was like, hold on, wait a minute, what is it doing? And what it's doing is it's analyzing the smoke that comes from sealing the wound, and it's able to tell if there are, you know, essentially what's in the thing that was just cut through.
It's not a tumor.
Right, to be able to tell if you're properly cutting, you know, around a tumor or not. And I thought that was fascinating. I mean, what a great idea. I mean, if you're already in there doing something, you might as well get a little data while you're there. So that's, it's cool from that point of view, but there was a little bit kind of towards the end of the article, which said that what it might do is it'll cause people, or not people, I guess, yeah, surgeons are people, right? We're not talking about robotic surgeons. Not yet.
Not yet. I'm not going under the knife of some fucking tin can.
Anyway,
some fracking toaster.
Hold your horses. We haven't talked about... We're going to talk about kind of robots in a minute. We're going to get there. But the article said that a doctor who's a gastroenterologist specifically said that he doesn't cut things necessarily to check things out because it's so fine of a setup, right? Your GI tract, you have to be pretty careful about what you're cutting. And so even more careful than like in normal kind of situations. So this knife wouldn't necessarily benefit him, but what he does see is that it would benefit surgeons that have to cut through essentially more things to get to where they're going. And the example he used was women or I guess men, and men can get breast cancer too, but just because there's more kind of tissue to deal with, there's not a lot of kind of incidental cutting like to get to the place for gastroenterologists, I guess. So, you know, I think it's still good, right? It's obviously not a cure-all. I mean, nothing is, really. Except bacon.
Prayer.
I do love bacon. Anyway, sorry. Lost myself for a second. I guess it's going through clinical trials, et cetera, et cetera. So maybe sometime in, like, 2050, we'll be able to use it. We'll see.
And maybe they'll make it a little brighter so it'll actually look like a lightsaber.
Lightsaber surgery would be pretty cool, maybe. I'd be concerned that the surgeons would only do it with like really dramatic music playing all the time.
or if your surgeon shows up with a red one, you're like, hey, wait a minute. I don't think so.
Yeah, if only it were that easy, you could tell like if your surgeon was the right match for you, depending on like what color their lightsaber
was. I'm not going to let some Sith surgeon near me. Messing with my midichlorians. Not a thing. Not a thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. Surgical knives that have mass spectrometers, thing. Midichlorians, not a thing. Unless J.J. Abrams does a really good job with them somehow. It's still possible, right? Maybe?
I guess.
So moving on in our technology marches on kind of stuff.
Onward and upward.
Yes, upward. Especially if you're what were they called? Single rotor autonomous drones. There's a video of that's a great demonstration of the technology, and the short form is there are these little rotors that are really just the, you know, like a helicopter fan with a frame around it. And the frame itself, when it's alone, it looks like it just has too much power versus the amount of weight it has. Because when you turn it on, it flies and it can't stabilize itself because it's a single rotor and there's no balance or trim control.
Well, it stays on the ground.
Yeah.
It drives on the ground till it connects with the other similar devices.
Right. And then when there are two rotors, then you can balance at least in that direction. If you have three or more rotors, then they'll kind of balance each other, and then you have a stable kind of flying platform. And the interesting thing is that the way that these things are made, they're kind of hexagonally shaped, and they have magnets on all sides and wheels on the bottom, so they can roll around and towards each other. And they have sensors for where they are, and then up and down, and you know, tilt control and stuff. But they are really only useful when you have more than one rotor connected, because you can't counterbalance with just one rotor. So the crazy thing is, when they join up and fly, it pretty much doesn't matter what configuration they're in. It's just as long as there's more than one of them in order to balance each other. And it looks like the way that they're built is that they are not only does it not matter how they're joined up, they find each other for flying purposes. So they're pretty autonomous looking. At least you can program them. You can probably program them with some amount of information, like carrying something, you know, like form so you can become a platform, because it looks like that's the result of how these things set up. You mentioned in our pre-show banter, which we apparently, or I didn't listen to, that it's the helicarrier from the Avengers.
Yeah, that's what it looks like.
I mean, there's even part of the video where it flies and takes off and kind of control and levels itself out, and then someone reaches over and kind of knocks it, and it levels itself out automatically. So it's able to kind of in concert. It had maybe five or six different rotors attached in kind of a weird configuration, not a symmetric kind of thing at all, but just kind of this weird, funny shape. And it's able to right itself after being pushed around. Pretty cool. Or you know, scary.
You know, we're a year into the podcast, and I think I've finally figured out my relationship with robots and automated devices.
Okay.
They're like sharks. That I think they're amazing, and they're very interesting and entertaining.
They deserve a beautiful week on the Discovery Channel. Yeah,
they deserve a week on the Discovery Channel, and they scare the crap out of me. I'm fascinated and frightened by them at the same time.
That is a good way to put them. I think it still is in the fascinating kind of vein for me, but the scary part of it is definitely creeping up more and more as we talk about them. And this one isn't even like directly malicious or anything.
Well, it's... until you combine it with that eye knife, that cauterizing scalpel, you throw a couple of those on one of these things and you're asking for trouble.
That's what the rotor blades are made of.
Yes. These are my nightmares. Welcome to the podcast.
Well, some good training for something like that would probably be a video game to be able to deal with that. It's rife for good, you know, video game kind of stuff, right? You're dodging robots, they're flying through the air and stuff like that. And something out of Disney, of all places, I guess Disney Imagineers are still around and imagineering things, because some really cool demo that got put together, and then they made a video describing a thing that they're calling Ariel, like, which I think is funny. It's not Disney Little Mermaid Ariel, but Ariel, A-E-R-I-A-L, like air.
No, A-I-R-E-A-L, like air. Real. Oh,
that's even worse.
It's real air.
Well, their name, they may have to work with the name a little bit more. But
the Magic Dragon.
It essentially is a little mini air cannon that can fire a really tiny burst of air at anything, and it looks like it can pivot. It's got a little nozzle on it and can pivot in any direction. And it's a very discreet kind of puff of air. It's not like a continuous stream. And it's made to kind of give, or they're making it to give feedback for gesture-controlled things. One of the
like
things
the Kinect.
That's... Right. And it doesn't even have to be a touchless kind of thing, although it definitely works for that too, right? I mean, one of the weird things about, you know, using any kind of smartphone or touchscreen kind of devices, they've built in a lot. I mean, a very common kind of gesture is the kind of I'm scrolling by pushing it like I'm reading a book kind of thing. Except when you slide your finger across the screen, it feels nothing like reading a book. There's no feedback to know if you've actually done it right or not. And this is even worse when you're gesturing in the air, like with a Kinect or something. And so their idea is that if you can direct a puff of air into your hand as you're sliding it over where you would bump into something, it gives you a little bit of feedback. It's
augmented reality.
Right. It's a field of research called haptics. I've seen it in other things. Like one thing I read was that it's very difficult when you're typing to tell sometimes if you've hit a character or the right character. And so what some phones do, I think Android phones can do this, or you can turn it on, is that every time you type, every time you hit a key on the touchscreen, it will like shake just the slightest bit. So you can tell that, you know, something is happening. You're not just kind of tapping, you know, into the ether as you're typing. So if you miss, you can feel if you're like between keys. Now, the problem is if you miss and it's a different key, then you have to contend with autocorrect and all of its fun. But, you know, this, you know, baby steps. So it looks like a really neat technology, and it has a lot of applications, I think, for games. But also, it just is another way of doing input. I mean, the example in one of the videos is kind of a like a flight simulator-y kind of thing, and you're flying through this this field of like butterflies, and as the butterflies go past your head, they're blowing air, and that's fine. I see that as a immersive thing for a game, but I can also see that as a good way to do essentially just another level of input that isn't visual, right? I mean, your visual is going to be overwhelmed if you're, say, I don't know, landing a plane. And, you know, if you want another input, another flashing light or another, you know, noise isn't necessarily going to get your attention. But if you feel like, you know, something whoosh past your head, you're going to notice. And it's that kind of thing, I think, that they're going for in the demo, which I think is cool. I think, you know, another way of giving people feedback kind of validates doing gestures in the air without, you know, because I disagree with a lot of the sci-fi kind of stuff where people are kind of gesturing by moving things in the air. And I think there's not enough feedback in those kinds of loops to work. So this is a good step in the right direction.
Going back to what you said earlier about autocorrect and Android devices.
Yeah.
Which do you think we're going to crack first? Actual usable autocorrect or artificial intelligence? Could you see a world where we have artificial intelligence, but not we have to fix autocorrect first, right? Otherwise, you're going to have autocorrect problems with intelligence.
Right, it's going to completely misunderstand you. If it can't even understand you at the most basic kind of verbal level, how is it going to understand you at the kind of meta level when you're talking, you know, like when you're being sarcastic or something like that? Yeah, I think it's a two-pronged approach for sure. But you're right. They got to get the full understanding of intention down pretty early. Otherwise, the whole thing just kind of goes to crap.
So does that mean I don't really need to worry about robots taking over until we have actual workable autocorrect?
Oh, no, you absolutely have to worry about robots.
Would someone be dumb enough to create that without fixing the other one first?
Because I think that robots that do kind of tasks that are less interesting are going to be more kind of at the forefront. So maybe it's, you know...
I mean, autocorrect singularity.
Right. Once the Roomba becomes self-aware, then we have an issue. But I think in between those two things, there's still a bunch of steps. And I don't know if autocorrect needs to necessarily be, you know, directly fixed for the purposes of artificial intelligence to work. I think artificial.
Well, it should be fixed because it needs to be fixed.
Exactly.
You know they say if it ain't broke, don't fix it. That shit is broke.
Well, artificial intelligence, I think, already does exist enough to that things can be done. But they, you're right, they demand kind of perfect input, right? So perfect input is a requirement for artificial intelligence to do anything really big and useful. I think it can still be used for kind of smaller things. You know, I mean, Google's using it to drive a car, so it counts for something. It's just not artificial intelligence that you could necessarily talk to.
Not something that's going to pass, what is that, the Turing test?
Right, right.
So you don't have to worry about something passing the Turing test until they've fixed autocorrect.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's actually one of the things in the Turing test is that people will mistype things on purpose and see what the computer replies with, because part of it is, you know, if someone misspells something to you or missays something to you, I think the polite thing to do is to kind of go along with it, unless it's a very like specific thing and it would be embarrassing for them to mispronounce.
And then you ridicule them later behind their back.
Right, exactly. But I think it's that's something that they do in the Turing test is like, do you give them bad information to see if the computer or the person responding reacts by mirroring the bad information or correcting the bad information. So it's an interesting topic. We should actually have some people that know stuff about it on. That would be really cool.
Yeah, any roboticists out there?
Yeah, you know, computers and natural language and stuff like that, natural language processing, we'd love to have you on.
Any Susan Calvin types out there?
Keen. Well, kind of moving from... actually, that was like I said, that was produced by Disney, of all places, and I'm sure Disney, or at least a piece of Disney, had something to do with stuff over the weekend. We're moving slightly generally into spoiler territory. We may not spoil anything that isn't in kind of the national consciousness already, but we are going to be talking about San Diego Comic-Con. Hooray! Did you go this year?
No.
Yeah,
me neither. I saw you on Sunday. How would I have gone?
Yeah, we didn't go this year. I think we went... we talked about this last time. I don't have to talk about my Heroes connection again. Anyway, a lot of stuff in the news. We talked about it a little bit kind of in the intervening days, but... What is the thing you're most excited about?
Probably Guardians of the Galaxy. I enjoyed the work of James Gunn.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll be interesting to see what he does with a film like that.
Yeah.
Kind of a genre guy.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting direction for them because it's not... I mean, they're not well-known. Right there.
Right. I don't know anything about it really, other than who's going to be in it and a little bit about the characters. But
yeah,
and that the fact that they shaved Karen Gillan's head broke my heart.
Well, I think it's like I said, an interesting direction for them to not go with something kind of known, but still bankroll a fair amount of budget onto it. That I think that is a lot of faith in the fan base kind of appearing. So we'll see how that goes. I mean, I am excited for Guardians of the Galaxy, maybe even probably more than for Avengers 2, just because I liked the Avengers, but I felt that there was so much going on that it was hard to... focus on everything. I kind of like discrete stories and their own stories. Although now that the Avengers is kind of out, I found Iron Man 3 to be, it's weird. I want it both ways, right? I found Iron Man 3 like, why don't you just call the Avengers to help you?
Well, another movie that got a lot of press over the weekend that has the potential to have that issue is X-Men Days of Future Past,
mm-hmm.
which could either be the coolest movie ever, or it's going to be a complete mess. There are a lot of characters in that movie.
Yeah.
And a lot of different generations of the same characters.
Yeah. It's going to be a wild ride for that. So that will be kind of a fun thing to do too. Both these things are Marvel properties, which are owned by Disney. So that's our kind of through line for that. I think, was there any non-Disney news?
Well, there's this other little comic book shop that has these characters called Batman and Superman that are going to be doing some teaming action.
Yeah. Yeah,
But I'm less excited. I don't know what it is. Maybe the DC stuff just doesn't excite me as much.
Well, I know for the DC stuff, I think specifically is that it's hard to get that kind of sense of fun from it because it's so serious. It's just very kind of dark and brooding and really hard to be light in the movies. And I know that, you know, there's a lot more lightness in the Batman movies than there was in the latest Superman one. So it will be weird to see how they merge those together because Superman and Batman, you know, the world's finest kind of team ups in DC Comics and stuff, were always done with a very light tone when they're teaming up. Now, I'm not talking, you know, Dark Knight Returns.
That was dark.
Yeah. I mean, if they're going for a Dark Knight Returns kind of look, that could be interesting too, but that's also making a couple different changes timeline wise. And I'm actually okay with that too. I think that one of the fun things about comics is that there's not a single timeline that's happening for the most part. I think DC has kind of thrown that for a loop for a bit with their New 52 stuff. But for the longest time, I mean, there were like four different Batman lines of comics and they weren't related, right? You could have like three different or four different kind of things, almost takes on Batman in that kind of space, which meant that the stories could be all over the place. What I think would be interesting, and one of the, you know, before they announced that they were kind of merging the X-Men storylines, I would have been fine with an X-Men storyline that you just bring all the actors back. You know, you don't have to explain that Cyclops is gone or Professor X is gone or whatever. Just have another story, a different X-Men story. Same actors, same characters, just different.
Well, I'm fine with that iteration of Cyclops being gone. He was a whiny bitch.
Okay, all right, fair enough. Yeah.
I think my favorite thing that I read about or saw from the con this year was Bryan Cranston.
Yes.
So the famous people who go there will wear masks when they're out on the floor to prevent getting mobbed. And what did Bryan Cranston do? He wore a Bryan Cranston mask.
Just a little eerie, maybe.
He had his Heisenberg mask on.
Yeah.
That just cracked me up.
Yeah, I think it's funny because he has grown his hair back to some degree. But Heisenberg is bald, so he was wearing a bald mask walking
around. Like he flipped his hair because Heisenberg has no hair on top and a goatee.
Yeah.
And he has hair on top and no goatee.
Right. Oh, that's good. I think, what is it? The only other bit of news that I was interested in, I don't think I saw any of the TV related stuff. trying to think if I was excited for any of that. I mean, I think The Walking Dead, I watched the trailer for the new season, and of course I want it, like, right now. But other than that, I don't have that much to say about it.
Yes, immediately, please.
Yes. Although, Carl looks like he's hit a bit of a growth spurt.
I haven't seen the trailer yet.
You should look it up. He's also, I want to say, on the cover of Entertainment Weekly. And, yeah, he does not look how old he's supposed to be. So.
Well, one of the other things that got some press this year was they're remaking Godzilla.
Yeah.
Which will hopefully be better than the Matthew Broderick Godzilla.
Yeah.
And I think they've got a good director doing it. They got Gareth Edwards, who did this tiny little film called Monsters back in 2010.
Yeah,
which I believe you saw recently, correct?
I did. So right after our show last week, we continued to talk about Pacific Rim for a little bit of time. And one of the things that had come up was the movie Monsters, which is a really small movie. And not, I mean, it's, the premise is, without giving too much away, is a like kind of photographer, you know, on contract photographer is in Mexico, and he's given a job to kind of help the daughter of the company he works for find her after, you know, some like wild night of partying in Mexico, and then put her on, you know, the next train out of Mexico to get back home. And
the hitch is that Mexico is under quarantine because aliens have invaded.
Yeah,
essentially. Or have just kind of shown up and right. taken over.
Yeah, a space probe that was supposed to check out some alien rock, checked that thing out, brought some samples back, and then broke up on reentry. And this is all said in like the prologue for the movie, so it's not giving anything away. But essentially, there are big, funky looking alien things that are walking around in Mexico, and that's why it's even more dangerous than usual to be in Mexico. But it's an interesting movie. I mean, the special effects are very low key. It's very understated. There are a few big set pieces with special effects, but for the most part, it's just a
it's an intimate movie.
Yeah, yeah.
It's an intimate monster movie.
Following those two people trying to get out of Mexico and all the, you know, crap that they have to deal with, kind of. And it's, excuse me, it's shot really well, and apparently, I didn't know this, but it was shot with a really, like, tiny budget.
$500,000.
It's
$500,000.
Right. And it looks
nothing
good. It looks really good. In the same way that I think a lot of the Guillermo del Toro movies kind of look, like Hellboy. Those definitely had a budget, but not like a super duper big budget. The budget for Pacific Rim was probably astronomical, but it's the kind of thing where, you know, he, like, Pan's Labyrinth is a really good movie, and you can tell, like, they squeezed every dollar out of the special effects to creep you the hell out.
Well, apparently the director, who is also the cinematographer and writer, did all the effects himself. Using ZBrush and Autodesk.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
That's how you keep a movie that inexpensive.
How did they drop that Jeep?
I don't know.
Yes.
It's impressive.
Yeah.
It's even more impressive when you look at the budget and how it was made.
Yeah.
But it's, yeah.
Well, that could be good then. I think he obviously has a pedigree for monster movies, a pedigree for kind of the emotional impact of just a few characters, and working with a budget, I think this is a good alignment for him, movie-wise. So I'm looking forward to that. That's good. I know they're rebooting a bunch of other things. RoboCop comes to mind.
There's something like over a dozen sequels are coming out next year.
Wow.
Like big sequels.
Mm-hmm.
That seems to be where the money's at these days.
Well, it's interesting because I think RoboCop, which is set in Detroit, is getting a sequel. But I think Detroit is like...
No, Detroit's not getting a sequel.
Right. They're about to declare bankruptcy, or if they haven't already.
I think they already did.
Oh, God. Spent all that money getting Alex Murphy back up on out on the streets, right? Oh.
Way to end the one-year podcast anniversary on a high note, Alan. We are the consummate professionals that we are.
Yeah. I mean, we actually met in person on Sunday, and I had this thought that maybe we could record a podcast, but no, we just decided to drink and eat in the sun at Lagunitas Brewing Company.
Yeah, there was too much beer and nachos and live music to actually record anything.
Yeah, that was a good time, though. We'll have to do that again, maybe before the two-year anniversary.
Yes. So, we're ending the year well. And I have hope for the new year.
So is this our, like, podcast fiscal year kind of thing?
Yeah. I mean, this New Year's Eve, right?
Yeah.
That's how I count it.
Right.
I mean, I'm wasted. No, I'm not. I would never podcast and intoxicated.
I... Yeah. Anyway, thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll talk to you next week, Brennan.
Until next time.